Welcome to Songwriter Trysts, an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee and your host for this show. Music saved my life and I want to talk to other songwriters about the power of songwriting, talk about their journey and how they got to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. If you're enjoying the show and you want to support the vision, you can buy me a coffee as a once-off or you can become a monthly subscriber through the website songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Chris Wallen. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you. I've been listening to your Spotify and your songs are beautiful. I listen to a lot of music and I've talked to over 130 songwriters on this podcast and I have to say probably one of the best songwriters I've heard. Every song and every lyric just gives me tingles and I don't know how you do it. So I'm going to find out more. It's just beautiful. I need to learn from this guy. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Well, I don't know about that.
Maybe it's just you. Maybe it's just the gift, but I'm going to find out more. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Who are you and where do you come from?
Well, I come from the U.S. I come from Tennessee. I live in Nashville, but I was born and raised in East Tennessee in a really small town. And when I was little, my mother, when my mom and my dad split up when I was about 7 years old, and my mother moved to Nashville to be a singer and a songwriter, and I moved with her. And we ended up living in an apartment on top of a bar on Broadway.
Oh, wow.
And
which one was it?
It was called The Turf. Was the name of the bar. It's not there anymore.
I haven't heard of that one.
But we lived on top of the turf and mom sang there at night. It was a different Broadway back then. It wasn't like, it wasn't the tourist destination that it is right now. It was pretty rough back then. They had, you know, there was probably three strip clubs on Broadway. Something funny, one of my first memories is my mother and my stepdad getting into this huge argument because my stepdad was a guitar player. He was a studio guitar player.
Yeah.
But he come home and the good news was that he found a gig, a regular gig to play. The bad news was it was in one of those strip clubs on Broadway, and my mother was not having it.
Right. Oh, but you kind of, working musician, you can't be that choosy, can you?
Yeah, but my mother, she was something else. She's like, no, yeah, okay. We'll find something else.
Doctor, you ain't got a pill for whatever's making this world ill. Can't forgive inside a store. And peace, it's a politician's war. You won't find no resolution in the bottom of a bottle. In the stars of Aristotle, the only answer to the problem is people. Love.
You know, we ended up moving back home. She made a record there, and I tell people, I remember her dragging me around to all these bars and restaurants with a 45 record. She had a 45 record.
Yeah.
And she had these jukebox inserts. And what she would do is she would drag me around, and she would go into all these places and try to get her 45 record into all of the jukeboxes around town.
Right. Did that work?
And, no, we ended up moving back home. And so I came back again right after high school. I ended up working for a bail bondsman. I was actually helped him find fugitives.
Wow. What a life.
Yeah. And then, so I ended up moving back home again. And finally, about 25 years ago, I moved to Nashville, and it finally stuck. So I ended up getting some songs recorded and actually have made a living writing songs for 20 years.
Wow. So it took you 5 years to get there?
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds pretty quick. I've heard it's a 12-year career in Nashville.
Yeah, it depends. To be honest, there are people, amazingly talented people here that never has, that I thought were way before me, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of crazy sometimes who ends up moving on and who doesn't, you know. It's sometimes it doesn't make any sense, but.
Yeah, the world is its own little living entity, isn't it? It's an organism.
Definitely.
That we've just got to let it be.
Definitely.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. You've written, I listen to People Loving People by Garth Brooks, and your songs are all very, very good, whether they've been cut by someone else or the ones that I heard. I assume that was you singing and the ones that are on your name on Spotify.
Yes,
and
yes.
So they're incredible songs. Tell me, when did you first write your song? Did your mum train you up while she was doing it, or how did it start for you?
For me, it's something I've done, it seems like, my whole life. Like I said, I started when I was 7, and and it was just, I always tell people there was about an 8-year time period that I actually had to work for a living.
Yeah.
I worked in a factory. But it's just something that I knew. I think it helped me, the background that I had, I think it helped me to know that the people that were singing the songs on the radio at the time weren't necessarily the people who created the songs.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I've played in bands. I've had my own band. I've done all that. But I've always wanted to be the songwriter. I have friends that went on to be really big stars, but I never really got that bug. I never wanted.
Not the entertainment side of things.
I still do shows. I do, you know, quote, hit songwriter shows where I go and tell the stories behind some of the hits that I've written and play them. But I never wanted to be that guy up front. I always wanted to be able to go to, you know, go to the grocery store when I wanted.
You didn't have to deal with the burdens of fame. Fair enough. I understand that. Yeah.
But I just always wanted to be the guy in the background. That's just always been more my style.
That's okay. I mean, everyone's going to have their own thing. I think it's good for you to know what it is you want, and either one is fine. There's no judgment, I think, what it is you're good at and where you feel comfortable.
Right.
Mm.
And I, you know, that's the thing is I think it really did help me to have that. And then when I finally did come here, I had a little bit more background than some people, you know.
Oh, it sounds like you've got a lot to talk about with a very colorful childhood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My dad was actually a preacher. My dad was a very religious man.
Oh, no way. Me too.
Yeah.
My dad's a pastor. Yep.
Yeah. My dad was a pastor. And so I grew up between my mother and my dad. You know, I would go back and forth and... Mm. I had a lot of churches and bars in my childhood.
I mean, that sounds like a great education for a songwriter, really. I mean, those two things, it's perfect.
Yeah, mom, you know, I would go and visit mom, and she would be sneaking me into bars.
Yeah.
You know, while she was singing, and And then I would go to Dad's, and of course we would, you know, be there every Sunday and be in church. So it was interesting. And I have to say, I've learned a lot from both of them, you know?
Mm. I reckon that would have been quite confusing as a kid to see such extremes in both worlds and sort of questioning the world around you. You know, that would have been, for me, I would have questioned a lot seeing both of those worlds.
Well, I had, you know, also, I mean, the guitar, when I discovered the guitar, it was groundbreaking for me because I was the shy, fat kid. and it ended up being kind of like my security blanket. I had my guitar, and I remember in school, I was in English class, and I heard a knock on the door on English class, and it was the music teacher. And he came in and he said, "I need to talk to Chris." Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, first thing I thought, I'm in trouble. I don't know what I did, but
of course.
So basically what happened was they had a tone test in school. Mm-hmm. And I think it was fifth grade. Mm. I got the highest score in all of the school.
Wow.
On a tone test.
Okay.
And he asked me, he took me out of, you know, of class, and he says, do you play an instrument? And at the time I did. I played guitar. And he said, "Well, we can't have you play guitar in the school band." Mm-hmm. So he lent me his trumpet.
Okay.
To play. And I was absolutely terrible. I remember my uncle and my mother, we lived right there. They made me go to the pond to practice.
Get out of the house to do that.
It was not happening inside the house. I had to go all the way down and torture the fish in the pond.
Oh.
And I was always terrible at the trumpet. I never got
You never got any better.
I never got any better. And it was, what I would do is listen to people, and I could play and make sound come out, and I could actually do notes, but I didn't know what they were.
Yeah, okay. Didn't have the theory behind it.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I still don't. Of course, now I know a lot more about theory and a lot more about the musical aspects of it, but I still to this day can't read music.
Yeah. So you've got like a natural ear for it. I think it's one of those things you do have to practice, but I play by ear. And for songwriting, if you can sit at a piano or pick up a guitar and just play what you're feeling, that for me is all you really need. You don't have to know what you're playing. Someone else knows what you're doing. They can work it out.
Every time someone asks me if I can read, they ask me if I can read music, I always tell them, well, not enough to hurt me.
Yeah.
For me, when I play, I have songs that went on to be big hit songs that to this day, when I play them, I couldn't tell you some of the chords I'm playing.
Yeah, right.
For me, it's more about the feel and the emotion in the song. You know, I have a songwriting course that I'm working on right now. That it's funny that I'm kind of messing with this module on it right now about melody people. There's a misconception that you have to be a great musician to be a great melody writer. And it's not true. It actually, sometimes it's a detriment to people, because someone who is really good at something, they want to put more of that into the song. And what ends up happening is, you know, you got to be careful because they'll put what I like to call a chord per word in, you know, instead of
marrying. I hate it when people do that.
Yeah. Instead of actually marrying the melody and the lyrics into something that fits together, it's more of, hey, look what I can do, you know.
Yeah. It's a bit of ego showing. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about it is there are amazing musicians that are also amazing melody people.
Yeah.
But it isn't necessarily a given.
Yeah. Well, that makes me feel really good. For me, that's really reassuring because I know that I'm not a huge, amazing musician and I fully rely on session musicians for my productions. But I would say one of my biggest strengths is melody and hooks. I'm the girl that comes up with the line that gets stuck in your head. And that's, I love that. I love it when my songs get stuck in people's heads, but definitely. I wouldn't say that I'm an amazing musician. And so knowing that that's okay.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah. And the thing about it is there's a musician here. There's a songwriter here. That's one of the biggest songwriters in Nashville, Craig Wiseman. He wrote Live Like You Were Dying. He wrote countless number ones. But he is a great melody person and a terrible musician. His melodies, when you hear him do his melodies himself on a guitar, it's dirty. He doesn't play the chords exactly clean but his chord placement is almost always magical.
And that's where the magic comes from.
Yeah, it's more of the marriage between the two. It isn't about how impressive the chord progression is. It's if that chord progression complements the lyrics. I always say that when you're coming up with melodies, because all a song is a 3-minute movie.
Yeah.
And you have to cast your character for that movie. And I always tell people, when you're reading that lyrics down, when you're just reading without any melody, think about the melody you have. Does it sound like the soundtrack to that movie?
Yeah, that's a really good way of thinking of it.
I have actually in my course, I talk about the narrator. And it's something I never hear anybody talking about. And that's why I did a whole section on it. And basically, the narrator is not the person singing the song, but the character that the song is portraying. He could be any genre, any type of song. Every song you've ever heard, if it has lyrics, has a narrator. And basically, it's someone that is telling the story of the song. And what would that narrator say and how would they say it? You might have a song that is about a college guy that sees this girl and he's out drinking and you can kind of see that guy.
Yeah.
Well, there are things that guy wouldn't say.
Yeah.
And you have to keep that in mind and keep in the character, in the narrator. It may be a woman that is just keyed her husband's car and it's not very happy.
Yeah.
About what he has done. And that person is going to talk in such a way and an overall feeling that someone else wouldn't have. And a lot of people, they don't think about that there's an actual narrator in your songs. And sometimes, you know, to make a song more authentic and believable,
yeah,
you just need a narrator.
I love that. And I've never named it the narrator, but definitely the character of the song. And when you think of it like a three-minute movie, it makes sense. You know, you're telling a story, but you're going to be telling the story from someone's perspective, and you need to consider that.
Well, that's the thing is, it is a three-minute movie, and even the, like I said, the melody, if you think, like I said before, if you think of the melody as the soundtrack, and then you have the narrator, and you, in the song, you might have a plot twist. You know, there's a lot of different, depending on the genre of song it is, but it always has a narrator no matter what kind of song. I want to make sure to say that because some people, when I start talking about a narrator, they think I'm talking about story song. And it is true for a story song as well, but any song with lyrics has a character in it. And just keep that in mind.
Very useful advice, and it is good to think about the character and the story and the theme that it's in and the setting that it's in and all of those things. I want to know, you've mentioned the course a few times. What's this course that you're doing? Where did that come from?
Just to be honest with you, with the pandemic and everything, it kind of came out of that and me having some free time. And to be honest with you, it came out of being frustrated with some of the lyric writing that I hear. You know?
Yeah, okay.
And so I just kind of decided one day, I said, well, maybe I can start making some notes on this. And the next thing you know, I'm in my studio for 6 hours, 7 hours a day and learning how to make slides. And I bought a teleprompter.
Oh, wow. Well done.
Yeah. Anyway, I ended up making this, if anybody wants to go check it out, it's buildinggreatsongs.com. And I'm pretty close to finishing it. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. I've got some interesting, I'm going to be doing some affiliates as well. And it'll be an interesting thing that it's something that's out there that, you know, that that's going to be out there from now on. So
yeah.
It,
anything that's supporting people into writing better songs, yes. I'm all for.
Yeah, and I also do mentoring as well. I do, you know, one-on-one video mentoring.
Yeah.
But, you know, with this, someone can buy this course and I can be teaching them about songwriting when I'm asleep, so...
Yeah, it means it's something. It's accessible for people all over the world, no matter what the time zone is. And you clearly have a lot to share. And I think that that's beautiful because it's going to be there forever. And anyone who wants to learn how you do what you do and what you've learned in your lifetime, they're going to be able to go and see that. And that's a beautiful gift and a legacy to give to other people.
Well, I just want, you know, I made a decision that I want to be a part of great songs, whether I'm writing them or whether I facilitate someone else to write them. Because I tell you, music, great music is very powerful.
Yeah.
It can change lives. There are songs that are special, and we need more of those kind of songs in the world.
That's the preacher part of you coming out. I recognize it right now. I can hear my daddy anytime.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the cool part though, that being able to reach out. Some people think that the hardest thing about songwriting is making someone feel something that you're feeling from the song. And that isn't true. The hardest thing about songwriting is taking a feeling from a third party, someone else, that you have never felt, and make a third party feel that.
Yeah.
Because if I just only wrote what I knew, I would have like five songs.
Yeah.
Because
so
I don't
true.
Know that much. I mean, you only go, you know, when I first started, of course, you end up, what is important to you, and usually it's a ballad.
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten, it's always a ballad.
Yeah, and guilty.
Yeah. I mean, that's because the ballads have the feelings. They have the emotions.
Don't blink. Just like that, you're 6 years old and you take a nap and you wake up and you're 25. Then your high school sweetheart becomes your wife. Don't blink. Just might miss your babies growing like mine did, turning into moms and dads. Next thing you know, you better have a 50 years is there in bed, and you're praying God takes you instead. Trust me, friend, 100 years goes faster than you think, so don't blink.
And that's what you start off with. I literally had, when I worked with Warner Brothers, I had a quota. I mean, I couldn't just write just whenever I wanted to. I literally had an office that I came into every day. I wrote 5-6 days a week.
Yeah.
And was booked up 3 months. I'm so glad I don't do that anymore, though. I'm so glad because...
You got over it after a while. I mean, that sounds like my dream because I've never done that. I mean, I would love to just be writing songs all day, every day, but it would get old, I guess.
Well, it doesn't get old, but it gets pretty soon you write all of your ideas. Like ideas become gold. Like great ideas become gold because if I come up with an idea, I automatically think, oh, I know who I need to write that with, and I'll go write it.
Yeah, right.
So
you got to write another song. So
But now I've found the whole way I do business has changed because now I write almost strictly with artists because artists nowadays, so many artists are writing on their own records that you have a much better, you know, chance of getting on the record if you write it with an artist.
Yep.
I was going to tell you too, we touched on this a little bit, but my first cut I ever got, the song I ever got recorded was in Australia.
Oh, really? Which one was that?
Well, I had a couple, I think I had three. My first one was from an artist named Brendan Walmsley. And I remember they said he was playing the Tamworth.
Yep.
The festival there. And but he sang a song called That's What Brothers Do. And then I had Adam Brand.
Oh yeah. I did a gig with him in March.
Yeah, he cut a song of mine called I'm Gone to Venus. And then Yeah, if men are from Mars or women are from Venus, I'm going to Venus.
Oh, I love that. That sounds like an Adam Brand song.
Yeah, no, it's very, I mean, up-tempo. I've had a few songs in Australia, and I've always wanted to go there. Maybe I'll make it up there one day.
Oh, you haven't been yet?
No.
Well, you have to come over. Come to the Gold Coast. That's where I am. Adam Brand's here as well, along with a lot of songwriters. So come meet everyone. Maybe come to the Tamworth Festival.
I haven't seen Adam in forever. The last time I saw him, he offered me his bus.
His bus?
Yes. And he was explaining to me, he said, yeah, he said, come down. He said, you can use my bus and do some shows here. And that's been years ago.
I don't know if there is still a bus. That's funny.
That's the thing is, I tell you, interesting how weird how things work out is when I first came to town, I used to freeze McDonald's hamburgers. I would come to town and because I could eat all week on the McDonald's had a special going at one time.
Mm-hmm.
It was 29-cent hamburgers on Wednesdays.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And they had this special and I would go and I would buy 50 hamburgers, a large fry and a Diet Coke. so
and that was your food for the week.
Yeah. And and so I was playing my songs for this one publisher for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And but I got a call one day from the company that had the loan for the car that I was driving, that I used to drive, you know, back mm-hmm. home before I moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
And they told me that basically they were going to come and repossess my car if I didn't bring $860 if I didn't send them $860 that they yep. were going to come and repossess my car. Well, that may as well have been $800,000. I didn't right. have $8 at the time.
Yep.
And so I was calling around my dad and I was called, nobody had the money. And mm-hmm. so I was about to move back home. I was at that point. I was, there's no way I can keep this up. I'm going to have to just move back home, I guess. Well,
dude, yeah.
I got a call from a guy named Kingsley Brock of mm-hmm. King Lizard Music. And it was Kingsley Brock and Liz Rose. Liz Rose ended up years later writing almost, I mean, a crazy number of Taylor Swift songs with Taylor.
Okay.
So if you look on a lot of the earlier Taylor Swift songs, all of them will say Liz Rose.
Yep.
So basically he called me and that week and he said, hey, you've been coming and playing a songs and I would like to talk to you about writing for us, about being a staff writer at King Lizard Music.
Okay.
So I went there. And he had no idea what was going on with me at the time. He didn't have any idea. So basically, I came there and he said, okay, so we love your songs. We want to give you $400 for your Schedule A, which a Schedule A means every song I have ever written.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah, so we'll give you $400 for those. We will, we'll say it's the first of the month. It was the middle of the month. So they said for fiscal reasons, for financial reasons, we'll start it at the first of the month.
Yep.
And we'll give you $250 a week. And he said, I can write you a check right now for $900.
What?
And I'll be honest with you. I shed a tear or two, but I ended up leaving there. I went to a grocery store here called Kroger and I went to Western Union in Kroger and I Western Unioned Ford Motor Credit was the name of the loan company.
Yep.
Ford Motor Credit, I sent them $860.
Yeah.
And I took the rest of that money. That was on a Monday.
Yeah.
And Wednesday, and I went to McDonald's and I ordered 100 hamburgers, a large fry and a Diet Coke. And I will never forget this as long as I live. And I'll tell you why. It's because, you know, I've actually lost 60 pounds. So I was 60 pounds heavier then than I am now. So I was hitting the 300 mark, you know. And
crazy.
So I come up and I said, I told the girl, I want 100 hamburgers, a large fry, and a Diet Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked right at me and said, do you want that for here or to go? I was like, wow.
Okay. I would have said, do you want that for here or the hospital?
I said, well, I guess I look like I could eat 100 hamburgers in one sitting.
Oh, I've never even considered freezing McDonald's, if I'm honest.
You know, they weren't too bad. I'll be honest, they weren't that bad when you just because I could eat all week on $15, you know? I mean, it was,
yeah,
it was so cheap because it was 29 cents hamburgers, you know? So, so I would go and I, they were pretty good until you got down to the very last five. Mm. And then I just had to pretend it was a pizza and it was just crust. That's why it was so crunchy.
Oh, I mean, I lived on baked beans and 2-minute noodles and dim sum, like the, you know, the nasty cheap stuff. And you do it because it's $2 for a meal or whatever. And
right, right.
I'm a little bit younger, I guess, so that's probably equivalent. But it is. I mean, you just do what you have to do, don't you?
And oh, yeah. And around that time, there was also something that happened. Me and my buddy, his name is Craig Monday, is his name, and he was my first roommate when I first come to town. And he was living with another roommate in the same apartment building, and that he moved in, and then he left them and moved in with me when I first come to town. Well, the first month that I moved in, I was, you know, I was waiting on my 401k because I was working at this factory and I had this 401k money that I was going to be getting, but it was taking way long, too long.
Yep.
So I went to him. I said, Craig, I'm so embarrassed about this. I'm so sorry to even have to tell you this. And he goes, what is it, man? What is it? I said, I feel so bad, but I don't have my half of the rent this month. It's the first month.
Yeah.
And I don't have it. And he looked right at me. He said, don't feel too bad because I don't have mine either. so we ended up, there was a mall right beside of our apartment. We said, well, let's just go walk. What are we going to do? You know, let's go walking around the mall. And so we went walking around the mall and just kind of saying, man, well, what, I don't know what we're going to do. And we ended up being gone probably a couple of, you know, probably 2 or 3 hours. And we came back and there was a piece of paper that was nailed to the door. And he said, what is that on our door? And we walked up, and because he went from one apartment, because he stayed in those apartments and didn't move out of them, he went from one apartment to another apartment.
Yeah.
It says, thank you so much for your loyalty. We would like to offer you a month's free rent.
Oh, do you think they had really thin walls and they just heard your conversation about
I don't know, but him and I was just looking at each other and looking at the paper and then looking at each other and looking at the paper going, what is happening?
Yeah.
It was the craziest thing. And I think back on that stuff, you know, I had a couple of those things happen to me. And I think back on, you know, there are some very talented people that didn't get that break.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't get that last minute reprieve.
Mm.
That didn't get that that last minute save that I got a couple of times. I think about that. You know, I think about it's, of course, my dad's in my ear saying,
yeah, me
you
too.
Know, I know who it is.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, it is I think being a pastor's kid, you know, you're always going to have that voice there. But I've had those moments where, I'm in those moments on a daily basis, even today, I'm still there, you know?
Right.
And it's like those moments happen where it's like, I don't know what's coming next. And then something happens in that last minute where you are calling out. And it is, it's kind of like confirmation of like, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Keep doing it.
Yeah, right.
You know, this is where I want you to be. And
right.
You may not always have what you want, but you always have everything you need. And that's something that my daddy definitely taught me. And I think those moments is...
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. It's make you scratch your head sometimes, you know.
I think that's beautiful. I think it's beautiful. And it sounds like you're very intuitive. And I think you have to be very intuitive as a songwriter to be able to know what's to come next. You've obviously had many, many years of following that intuition and that gut and that passion, and it's paid off for you. And like you said, it doesn't always pay off for everyone, but everyone's got to walk their own path, you know?
Right. Yeah. Mm. And and that's the thing too, is I've always, songwriting has always been one of those things that I believe in creative cycles. I believe, especially when I was writing every day for years and decades, I literally wrote almost every day of my life, and I could feel creative mountains and valleys.
Yeah.
And I could feel myself kind of going out, and I couldn't think of anything. And then I could kind of feel the wave coming. It's so crazy how that works. I always say, songwriters, all we are filters. Life comes in, and then a song comes out the other side.
What did you do in those valleys, those moments? Because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with that I've talked to, when you want to write, but it's just not coming out. You know, it's not there.
I think, the main thing is to know that as long as you keep going, as long as you keep writing, it's going to come, because if you've written songs in the past, you know it's inside you.
Yeah.
And it's just that belief, and just you have to keep going, because if you stop, then there's some people who just give up.
Yeah.
But the truth is, when the cycle comes back up and you're feeling creative, and I like to call it, boys, I wrote it down the other day, purposeful inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's just a state of mind. It's being in a state of mind that you're constantly listening for song ideas. And you're constantly, you purposely write something down that touches you. And you have it there, because so many people feel things like that. Oh, that's so beautiful. And then that was the last thing that, they move on.
Yeah.
When it's always better to, when you capture those moments, to write them down, to come back to them. And a lot of times that, that inspiration is right there. One thing I used to do that I never really saw anybody else do is, if I had someone that I co-wrote with a lot, which I did, I had a friend of mine named Anthony Smith that him and I wrote a lot together. And
I saw his name come up a fair bit.
Yeah.
In your songs. Yep.
Oh yeah. He's great, great talent. But he wrote a bunch of stuff for George Strait. And so him and I used to have hook sessions where we would purposely not write a song. We would go into these sessions because we know we would be writing at least once a week.
Yep.
So what we would do is we would go in and have hook sessions. And basically, we would sit down and just think of hooks for songs and kind of, maybe get a little outline and then move on. We would purposely not write that song.
Yeah.
And then we'd move on to something else. And maybe we would go to a ballad this time or an up-tempo and try to think of ideas for songs and hooks.
Yeah.
And we would write together. And we spent all day on that. And a lot of times we couldn't help but write a song, because we would go through all these song ideas, and then one would really hit.
Yeah.
And we would be like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. So we would end up writing that song, even though we were trying not to. and so what happens is, our next co-write, we have a whole book of ideas and songs that are started and titles and melody ideas. And we would just kill it for the next time we were writing. And that really helped us. For a long time when we did that.
I think that's incredible. I'm going to steal that, I reckon. Have some
hook
sessions.
No, please do.
Yeah,
please
absolutely.
Do. Yeah.
And it's similar to, I think I spoke with Pat Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
A long time ago. He was episode 40, which feels like forever. It's almost 100 episodes ago for me.
Wow.
But he talked about doing that, like the title game he talks about in his books. It's kind of the same sort of thing. You just bouncing titles off each other and you've got to use a word from the previous title to write the next one. And then at the end of it, you end up with sheets full of titles that you can obviously then do whatever you want with. And it's such a good creative game. Like, it's a fun game, really, isn't it? And then you never know what's going to come out of it. But something good always comes out of having fun, I believe.
Well, and also, it's good to get out of your own head sometimes, too, because sometimes when you're writing, you're just, you know, I've had a lot of what I like to call co-staring sessions.
Yeah.
Where you just stare at each other for like an hour, you know.
I've never had that, but I'm a chatterbox, so talk my head off.
Well, but that's another thing too, is that's another thing that I mentioned in my course, that there are all different kinds of songwriters. You have, you know, what I like to call, well, there's editors, there's melody people, there's lyricists, and there's what I like to call spewers, where they just spew out lyrics like one after the other. And the thing of it is a lot of times a spewer, it pairs really well with an editor, because an editor is someone that actually takes that and says, and kind of polishes it and says, well, maybe we need to put this over here. Maybe we need to say and instead of or here.
I love those editors. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a spewer. Maybe I've never heard that term before, but that might be a spewer.
Well, I made it up. So.
I did that in a session. Do you know Bill White? He's a Nashville songwriter.
Bill White. That sounds really familiar to me. He's also a
radio presenter for a long time. But,
yeah, I'm sure
comedy.
I met him.
He's a comedy songwriter, and I wrote a comedy country song that's coming out soon.
Oh, awesome.
And I did that to him, and it was with someone else from Australia who's also a comedian and a songwriter. And I specifically wrote with them because I had this commission job to do a comedy song that I've never written a comedy song before. So I spewed all of my ideas onto these guys, and Bill just edited it. And it was pretty much exactly what I was thinking, just in an edited, he did. And so it was, when you said that, I'm like, that's exactly what he did. I just spewed all my ideas onto him, and he just edited it and then made it better as well. Like, yeah.
Right. And don't get me wrong, there's some people who can do multiple of those, but usually you're really good at one of them. Really good at one of those.
What's yours with co-writing and things like that? What have you found that your strength is?
I'm definitely a lyric guy. I'm definitely, I'm usually good at finding, I call them the money lines, the twists, the little clever word phrases and things like
that.
I'm a geek on that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I can definitely hear those in your songs, and that's, I love that stuff. I wish I could do that. That's, they're beautiful.
Well, listen, if I could do it, anyone can do it.
Got to work on that craft, become a student. But no, it is definitely, some things just come naturally, you know. It's just people.
And that's the thing, is some people take to certain parts of songwriting and songwriting in general more than others. And that's just natural. I think that there is a misconception that, and this drives me crazy because, you know, there's a misconception that songwriters, there's some people that say you either have it or you don't, quote unquote, you know, or you can't teach songwriting. And I don't believe that. I think if that were true, then we would all stay the same songwriter that we were when we first started.
Right. Yeah.
But we learn and we grow. And
if we choose to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right. And but there are techniques that you use that a lot of times you don't know you're using. Some people write and are very natural at some of these techniques that I put in this course that people don't even know they're using them, but they're there.
Yeah.
I'm wanting to do a thing, and I'm probably going to do it here in the next month. It's a building theme. So what I want to do, I want to do song demolition.
Okay.
What I want is I'm going to take songs, everything from pop songs to country songs, to songs you've never heard of before that maybe I've written or and basically tear them apart and go through part by part and tell what techniques they used,
yeah,
and what rhyme schemes they used, and how, and what they used to get the emotion from this certain line, and just kind of, and the melody and all that, and just kind of, you know, kind of deconstruct a song.
That's a great idea.
I left my worries with all my hurry, sitting on the dock of the bay. I feel my spirit lifting as I'm drifting away. You can find me lost somewhere off the coast, making the most of the time I got. Keeping it between the waves keeps me from going crazy. When you're sinking in the deep end and you're running, but you're running out of road. That's why God made boats.
Mine's mostly, you know, it's very lyrical. And
yeah,
very, and just kind of how they pulled them emotion out, and how
like
some of the
idea.
Techniques that they use. So I'm planning on doing that and a couple other things. But
is that like a part of your course or is it a workshop? Or,
well, I'm definitely going to be putting it in the course, but I'm thinking about doing some sort of live Facebook thing. I don't know. I don't know.
We make sure you tell me when it is, because I'd love to be a part of that and watch,
yeah,
you do
definitely.
That. That'd be really cool.
Definitely.
We'll share it on the page. All right. We have covered so much. And I mean, your life just sounds absolutely incredible. And I hope that you've really felt like you've been able to express yourself and have a voice through everything that you've done. Have you found that being a songwriter, when you're not the artist and mostly writing for other artists, have you felt like you've been able to be heard as a songwriter and get your stuff out there?
Here in the last few years, I went down a path that was a professional songwriting path. And basically, yeah, that path, you have to be a chameleon.
Yeah.
I've written over 1,200 songs. And some of those songs, after talking to me, you know, I could play you some of these songs and you would never, ever think that I wrote that song, you know? And
yeah,
so you have to, you know, you have to be a chameleon and be able to change the way you think in a song.
Do you know Alan Roy Scott by any chance?
Alan Roy Scott.
He's a songwriter in LA, but I spoke to him yesterday and he said exactly the same thing. He's a chameleon.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing is, yeah, in the last few years, I have, before COVID hit, I was transitioning into more of a singer-songwriter because I perform a lot now.
Yeah.
So I go around and I perform for corporate events and things like that. So I'm kind of transitioning into, and I've had a couple of records. I've put out a couple of records, but I started doing things to Spotify and I started putting out songs that reflected me, that I loved, that I thought reflected me as a person and as an artist. And that's a whole different road, that because an artist, your road is unique. You want to stand out. You want someone to hear you and know your voice and know what you're about. A professional songwriter, you want a song that you can pitch to multiple people. It's kind of like a demo singer. A lot of people make the mistake of hiring, if there are a songwriter, you never really want to hire a demo singer that has a very unique voice.
Yeah, no.
Because you want that song, you want them to be able to hear that song for multiple artists.
Yeah.
So if you have someone that has just a very, it can be an amazing voice, but if it's a very unique voice, they're going to make it their own. And when you play it for someone that is not that style, it's going to turn them away, even though it might be a great song that they might have, you know. So it's just it's just a different road, a singer, songwriter, artist to just a songwriter. And I'm kind of in between that right now.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've, like, in this new world where anyone can put anything on Spotify and you can go out there and perform your stuff, that you've found a space where you can put out the stuff that makes you feel good and represents you as an artist as well. And that's really cool.
Right.
And, like, they're great songs. And I can hear there's obviously, I don't know, even just in the few songs I've heard that you've written or been a part of, I feel like there is, like, there's something in them that's, like, it's the Chris Wallen. Like, I don't, does that make sense? I don't like, and I don't know how you do that, but and I've yeah. listened to a few people who have written a lot of songs, and sometimes that there is that that flavor.
Yeah, that, I mean, I agree. Sometimes when you write, that you develop your own thing that even sometimes unconsciously that you put into your songs.
Yeah.
Also, if you get a chance, I don't know if you went to my YouTube or not, but I've done some on YouTube. I do some live stuff in the studio too.
Okay. Because you do production as well.
Yes, I do. I'm a producer as well. But the stuff I put on YouTube is it's just me and a guitar.
Okay.
It's just, to me, I'll be honest, I did a solo act for years, so I'm more comfortable with just me and a guitar than I am with a band.
Yeah, me too.
It's just so much less hassle. And I'm like,
less stress. You know,
the drummer's not getting mad at you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's pros and cons to both the solo and the band life. Yeah.
Definitely.
Tell me, I've got a question for you as far as what's the best advice you've ever been given and what's the worst advice you've ever been given?
Well, the best advice probably I got a little bit later on in my career that I was leaving. It isn't really songwriter advice. It's more of a music business advice.
Okay.
And,
still relevant.
And, yeah, so I was going to do a new deal with my publisher. I was going to re-up with my publisher. And my publisher really wanted to not go through an attorney.
Oh.
He wanted to just do it, just us, just him and I. And I was very, very young. I was very, I said, okay, well, yeah, let's do that. Well, I got to talking to Craig Wiseman, the guy I was telling you about. I was riding with Craig Wiseman. I was telling him what was going on, and he was shaking his head. He was like, Chris, he's like, let me give you some advice that that was given to me. What were you doing 15 years ago? By the way, my publisher at the time was Charlie Daniels' manager. He'd been Charlie Daniels' manager for 40 years. He'd been around, his name is David Corlew. He's been around a long, long time. So anyway, he said, what were you doing 15 years ago? I said, what was I doing? And I was like, well, at the time I wasn't even 30, I was in my mid 20s. And I said, oh, well, I was a teenager. I was just starting my freshman year in high school.
Yep.
And he said, you know what David Corlew was doing 15 years ago? I said, I don't know. He goes, he was negotiating deals like this. And he knows the ins and outs, and he knows the contracts, and he knows about reversion clauses, and he knows about and the stuff that I know a lot about now, but then and it hit me. I was like, I need, and David wasn't happy about it. He was not happy but that's what I did, and I ended up hiring me a lawyer, and it was the best thing I ever did. The worst advice that I ever had was before I ever moved to Nashville. There was this guy who was at a PRO. He was at BMI, just to tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
And I went in to play him songs. And he told me, he listened to my songs, and he said, I told him I was thinking about moving to Nashville.
Yep.
And he said, don't do it. He said, this is a 10-year town and you're 15 years away. It cut me to the bone. I went to ASCAP and I went to some other places.
Mm.
And they actually really liked, you know, what I was doing. And I moved anyway.
Mm.
I moved to town anyway. And I'm here to tell you, for 20 years, that person has been trying to get me to come over to BMI.
Oh, so I mean.
Well, but here's the thing. He doesn't know I was that young kid that he told not to move to Nashville.
Wow.
And he, to this day, he doesn't know.
Yeah.
That I was that guy. He don't remember because I'm sure he met a lot of, but.
Yep.
So anyway, I'm glad I didn't listen to him. So
people will always remember how you make them feel, won't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an incredible story and good, bad advice. But hopefully you used that bad advice to motivate you to go off and do what you want to do anyway and don't listen to people like that.
Yeah. And that's the thing is my brother used to say this, what other people think of me and my music has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. That's, I love that. Yeah, it's exactly right. If you love it and you're following your gut and it's what you want to do, that's all that matters.
Yeah. I mean, but when I moved to Nashville, to be honest, I didn't know, I could not tell you that I was going to be in songwriting. I love songwriting, but I just knew that I wanted to be part of music. And where I was living at the time, I was the songwriter. There was no music.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so.
No, I'm glad that you did that. All right. One more question for you. And thank you so much for your time because we've spoken for ages.
Thank you.
If you could co-write with anyone in the world, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Wow. It would have to be Johnny Cash.
Oh.
Actually, a really good friend of mine lived with Johnny Cash for three years.
Mm-hmm.
Ira Dean was his name. He was with the band Trick Pony years ago, but he lived with Johnny Cash for three, Johnny and June.
Yep.
And I just, you know, he's one of those people that cross genres because he just did what he did and he didn't give a crap what anybody else thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it would be amazing to just sit down with somebody like him and get kind of soak in some wisdom.
Yeah, I love that. I think I like that when I listen to anyone in any genre. I think you can hear when people are just doing what they love. They're not trying to be something else. They're just being themselves authentically as much as they can.
and that's the most important part, you know, is being authentic.
Mm.
That's the thing is someone can be, you could write a song that is, it may not be the big hit. It may not be the most well-written song in the world. But if it is truly authentic, people know.
Yeah.
And it's more powerful because of that.
Mm. Yeah, I have to agree with that. I was trying to work out the other day, because, you know, when you're an artist, you've got to find your sound in quotation marks, you know.
Yes.
And often producers will ask me or the artist, it was like, you know, who do you like? And I'm like, I like a whole wide range of genres and songs and artists.
Right.
And when I try to think about what it is I like about them and their sound, I think, honestly, it's because I feel like they're just being them and I love that. And I'm like, but I don't know if their sound is actually anything to do with my sound. I know that they're going to influence it, but it's a hard thing to try and work out how to have an authentic sound and an authentic everything else around what you're doing.
100%. It really is because, you know, the thing about it is artists, when I was talking about an artist nowadays, especially in the modern sense, I think it's a little different than it used to be. And I think it's sad that it is, but now, especially if an artist is with a record label, a lot of times, you know, they can almost become a product.
Yeah.
Sometimes where people are telling them this is your, you know, this is your demographic. Therefore this is the songs you kind of songs you need to sing. And this is, you know, where if you look back historically, the true artists, the ones that are just, you know, that are icons never sang a song that didn't represent them as a person or their artistry.
Yeah.
And I think that is still really important, where to, as an artist, to sing songs that represent you as a person. And sometimes, as far as the sound, it can be something in the background. It can be, you know, a sound that you use that is different from everyone else as well. You know, there's a thread in there.
Yeah.
And the hard thing is finding that thread but it sounds like you're, as my dad used to say, just talking to you, it feels like you're fishing in a deep well. So I think, I think you're going to find it.
Oh, thanks. I don't usually talk for this long on podcasts, but my spirit is stirring is what my dad would say. I don't know why, but like, I feel like I've fallen in love, and I'm not like, I didn't, you know, my husband always says that, you know, he knew he loved me from the first moment he met me. It was one of those moments. It wasn't that for me. It took quite a few months for me to fall in love with my husband, but I was totally like anti-men for a lot of reasons. But just talking to you, I feel that. Like, I feel like a deep sense of just love and appreciation.
Yeah, definitely.
And like, oh, it's incredible. And I'm just so grateful to have been able to have this chat with you. And I'm
100%. Anytime, any time that, you know, reach out to me. And if you need me back on or anything you need from me, just let me know. And,
absolutely.
And you know, and like I said, I'm just trying to figure out my next journey. I'm always going to be a songwriter. It doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
I feel like I was born a songwriter. It's nowadays you have to put out different, you know, you kind of have to have a lot of irons in the fire. And I have a lot out there right now. So I'm just trying to figure out what my next journey is and trying to be a part of great songs when it comes down to it.
I'm exactly the same. You know, we plan our ways, but he directs our steps. And gosh, yeah, I'll start sounding like my daddy too. But it's funny how much truth there is in so much beauty in that. And
definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to speak again. And
yeah, definitely.
We'll get to do some stuff and be a part of some great songs in some way in the future. And definitely have to catch up for a hamburger.
Hey, they're on me this time.
Oh, sounds good. I'm still in a situation where it's a carnal sin to turn down free food. So, and I've got three kids, and sometimes it's baked beans on toast, kids. But they're cool with it. Like, they don't care. So, but no, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else you would like to say before we finish up?
I also do a podcast with a buddy of mine, Marty Ray. The podcast is called Marty Ray Project Chats.
Okay.
And we interview all kinds of people, and we do food reviews. We do all kinds of stuff. So if you get a chance, check out the podcast, Marty Ray Project Chats.
Yeah,
definitely.
Awesome. So it's just talking about anything and everything, or is it music related?
We have entertainers, we have artists and for some reason, we interview a lot of MMA fighters. Like Hall of Fame wrestlers to artists, you know, country and R&B artists.
Cool.
But yeah.
All right. Well, if you ever want an Australian podcaster or singer-songwriter on your podcast,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Someone cancels and you need someone, I'm usually always available. Well, yeah, no, thank you, Chris. I'm really looking forward to sharing this. And yeah, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Ray.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Tris today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. Crowd, no one can hear me. Wish I could